This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Processes, reports going out. And like, why did you do it? Because
they're haphazard. They were never set
up. I've always done it. Mitch, right. I've known you for 20 years. They're just saying, like, you've always told me to do this. That's what I've always done.
Right.
And then you teach that person, that teach. It's that old telephone game. You know, probably in the beginning, a long time ago, it was great. But now it doesn't work out anymore.
Yeah, because it was the business owner and his assistant. That was it. It was the two of them. They were just getting started. And yeah. He did all the office support. And he would come in and say, here, can you take care of this? Can you do that? Let's do this. And then they started growing. Now they have 5 or 10 employees that have been added to do different things. And then just things shot all over the place.
Yeah. Like, and then when you go back in and you try to peel the onion back on those things and look at, hey, listen, you know, Mitch was doing this or Trevor was doing that. You're like, wow, like, man, that made sense. Like when we made, you know, 50 grand a year, now we're making
500. Yeah. 10 million.
Like,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that's not scalable. So, but it's good. Like you have to have those baselines to start because then you say, all right, what can I use here? And maybe I could take something from it. Maybe we can evolve it. Right. People talk about, I hate that word pivoting. Like I use it too quite a bit and I shouldn't.
Well, it's developing, right? You're developing people.
You adapt,
processes.
You evolve, right? Yeah. Like pivoting sounds to me just like.
Like a change in the business, it, what you're doing.
Yeah. But you're really just kind of, you're really evolving. Businesses evolve, right? Hey, listen, through the COVID crisis right now, businesses have to evolve.
Oh, yeah. The way that they deal with their customers is going to change. The way they collect money is changing. Look, a lot of small business owners are like, well, I don't take credit cards, you know, because it's expensive and we have to pay. Yeah, but there's a value to the reliability of people paying and the speed at which you get paid and the convenience of people paying. And now it's more than convenience. It's like people don't want to touch cash.
Yeah.
You know, so you better come up with different methods for them to pay you.
And the solution.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
My name is Trevor Ann Anderson. I own and operate TRJ Consulting Services. We're a full-service management consulting firm that focuses on fractional CFO and COO work for small businesses and startups. My background's in private equity. I spent 15 years in accounting and finance roles in multiple industries, and I really want to be a partner for a small business and a startup.
Okay, Trevor, so thanks for coming on the podcast. I know you and I have been trying to connect several times, and both you and me, we had to reschedule. So we're finally on the mic. I appreciate it. But you and I met through really because of this pandemic. I think we were introduced through some networking things, right? Or was it before? I don't remember if we were connected.
I feel like I've known you for a long time, Mitch.
But we never met in person though. So I know even if we were introduced before, we never met before we got
exactly
right.
Yeah.
Okay. But now because of Zoom, we could see each other. So that's good.
Of course.
Exactly. All right. So you know all about the podcast and you and I have been talking for a long time. So today we're going to talk about, you know, the financial side of running your business and doing a business plan and being on top of all that kind of stuff. We'll try and keep it, you know, as down to earth as we can, because sometimes you and I get real technical on things, as you and I both know.
Yeah.
But maybe you want to go back a little bit, talk about, you know, like where you're from, where you grew up, what your background is, your training, and where, how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, so I got a pretty unique background. So I grew up in Toms River. I'm a local guy in New Jersey. I spent some time down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where I went to school, got my degree and everything. And, you know, I've done everything from work in the distressed debt management on the sales side to venture capitalism to nonprofit. So, you know, it's a very interesting career. Like, I started my career as a landscape architect, what I went to school for. And midway through, my parents were like, well, if you want to do business, you got to change the business. So,
All right,
let's go to business. And I got my degree in business management down at Coastal Carolina University.
Okay.
And really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I was an intern for a hedge fund, you know, buying and selling debt. It was really kind of cool. Made a ton of money. This is what I want to do. But I had to come back home.
So buying and selling debt, you mean you were buying like corporate bonds and things for...
Yeah, like
trading
like,
for
yeah, like Chapter 11. So like, you know,
got
like
it.
30 distressed cents on the dollar.
Yeah,
for, yeah,
right.
Distressed debt. It's a real interesting market.
Now, right.
You know, my background wasn't in that, but I'm a good commission person. I like doing it. You know, I was enjoying it. And, you know, I had some, you know, unfortunate things happen in my life where I had to come home. My father passed away right before I graduated college.
Oh.
And I needed to come home. And
that was
and,
when you were in Myrtle Beach in that area?
Yeah.
Okay.
So It changed me. Obviously, things change who you are. But like, you know, I learned from early on, my father was a 30-year veteran in the car automotive industry as a service manager.
Okay.
So I saw the value of relationships before, like as I was learning to walk and talk.
Right.
You know, I could see, you know, what honesty, integrity, you know, transparency really did and how it kind of brought you where you need to be. So,
of course, because it builds a network of trust and with people that you know, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. Like, so what... So it really got my first start. So my first job was at a small investment firm, and I don't even call them a PE. They're just a small investment firm that owned retail flower shops in the local area, Ocean County, Monmouth County, and then Middlesex County.
So they were investors in the meaning they were inactive business. They were silent partners in the business.
Basically. Well, it was an ownership of like a family fund of one person who basically took the business from his father and had a backstop of like a fund behind him. And so what his model was, he was a unique artist designer, but saw the value of the retail flower shops. And I took my first job there, you know, as I'll call it a sales analyst, but you know, I did sales. I looked at their POS system. I learned the power of supply chain, cost of goods sold, inventory pricing, you know, inventory turns. You know, I got to get a good business understanding of how a small business works way early on in my career. And then from there, I went into New York and the advertising world and spent time in the client finance positions. And then ultimately, I transcended to manufacturing for a company called Dover Corporation, where I served as a consultant as they moved from New York to Chicago. And I kind of helped transition the two offices and then help kind of create a lot of the reporting structures they have today. And then I hopped into my bigger role in private equity, where I spent a majority of my career at a company called Ports America. You know, they owned and operated most of the terminals in the United States. I think it was 43 or 45 when I left there back in 2019. I say it like it's forever ago, a year ago. And then from there, what I decided to do was I got a great understanding. You know, I went up the traditional accounting finance role, you know, finance manager, analyst manager, controller, director. And then ultimately, I pivoted into my own business model, which is where I am today.
Okay.
So at the beginning of last year, I had an opportunity to take a buyout from the company I was at, Ports America, and really kind of focus on what I learned there in finance and operations. So across my whole career, I basically tied myself to operations. Even if I didn't have a direct reporting link to it, in my mind, I reported to operations. Okay. I always reported to my boss and took care of, you know, the people I needed to take care of. But I could create something great, but then if I can't get it to be bought in by operations and then also manage it from their aspect, it means nothing.
Right.
If those two aren't in sync, it means absolutely nothing.
Right,
so,
because operations and management, that's all the people, right? And businesses don't exist without people. So if you don't, a lot of people miss that. Businesses don't in and of themselves operate without people. Somebody started it. Somebody runs it. Somebody puts the money. If all the people go away, there won't be a company. So,
If I told you if you moved one move an hour faster, it would make me, you know, I don't know, 10% more EBITDA.
Right.
You know, how would you go ahead and control that, Mitch? Like, right. as you'd have to go to John, Sue, Sally, you know, Will, all the people that are working, that are moving this product or service, right. and influence them to come up or come down, depending on where you need the number to be.
Right.
So too often in finance, we get caught up in, you know, KPIs, those big words, key performance indicators,
right.
you know, plans, budgets, forecasts, whatever the claim is. And we lose sight of what that actually drives, you know,
right.
essentially the operations is making the change. They're driving revenue and they're driving efficiency. So,
right. But you were more hands-on, right? So some of the finance guys are just bean counters. They're producing the numbers. They're giving you all the indicators and they're saying, here you go. This is what needs to improve. If you're not hands-on, it goes out to the management. Operations may never get implemented, right?
Yeah. So like I relate it to like looking at like a financial model, right? With a balance sheet, a cash flow, you know, you're looking at your receivables, DSO, all these fancy, you know,
financial terms,
which are great. But if the core of the model is relating around operations, which it always is, and you don't have the right people in place and they're not speaking the right language, or
right.
vis-a-vis finance doesn't understand the language you're speaking, it's broken.
Right.
I've seen it happen. I can't even count how many times I've seen a model break because the people inputting the data don't understand what it means. Like, yeah, I can create checks and balances so I foot, you know, so I don't have any like, I'll call it circular errors or circular like references, you know, but if I don't understand the kind of, you know, movement of the service or the good or how much it costs me if I do this, then it means nothing. You know, models just numbers on a piece of paper or an Excel document for that.
Right. Right. Well, you know, for the average business owner, though, they're probably not doing too much modeling. They don't have
exactly.
access to your kind of services. They're just trying to figure out what do they price a product at and how do they run their business efficiently.
So that kind of it sweeps me back into what I'm doing now. So.
Good.
So basically, I designed my consulting business to kind of help us and focus on business owners that are smaller in nature that just really need some guidance, right?
Right.
Hey, listen, I think what we see with a lot of business owners, they'll get caught up in day-to-day things. Hey, you know, I own a flooring shop and I got to send my crews out there every day. But
right.
the people that are collecting the information for me, if they don't put it in right, it takes longer for the guys to get out to the site.
Right.
If it takes longer, it costs more money. I mean, that's
right.
just plain
no,
and simple.
That's an inefficiency.
Basic
good
math.
Example, right? Yeah, exactly.
But you have to hit it from the choke point. You have to go back to how is that person collecting the data? And what'll
right.
happen is when the business owner gets consumed in trying to figure that out, they're not growing the business.
Yeah.
Like they're kind of not paying homage to like, hey, listen, I need to have the best service, the best
right.
quality. You know, what am I doing for my customers? How am I marketing?
Right.
Like,
because they're not working on the business anymore. They're stuck working in the business. We do that, right? You come to work, you have a whole list of things you want to work on that day. You get to none of them because you're putting out fires and you're dealing with problems. That's
exactly.
why having a plan, and we've talked about this before. That's why having a written plan, the finance portion, the marketing portion, is something you go back to because the day got away from you. You know, you got to
yeah.
do the planning. Yeah, I agree. And if you never get to the point where you can be at the 30,000 foot level, it's very hard to move forward as a business owner because you're just putting out fires all day. You don't know what's going on. You can't measure those kind of things.
That and also like we talk about the word like the budget. Like
yeah.
I use the word budget as like the holy grail. Regardless if you forecast or trend or plan your business, like you had a set of construct that you put together when you initially set out to do this endeavor.
Right.
You I was going to make
what it's going to cost me. This is what I need for startup capital. This is what I need to produce the product. This is all kinds of things. Right. Of course.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So like and then. Ultimately, the goal is from my, you know, capacity is to say, hey, how have you been tracking against that? I mean, in
right.
most cases, business owners get so caught up in the day to day and the fires and everything else. They never sit back and say, hey, listen, I've been paying, you know, the vendor who supplies my calculators, whatever this name is, you know, I don't know, $1,000 a month. Well, hey, I'm Trevor and I can sell you calculators for, you know, $500 a month.
Right.
Like where's the opportunity costing there of not being able to evaluate those kind of, I'll call them low-hanging fruit. A lot of people like that word. Things that are just low-hanging fruit, right, for the viewers. Just
they're
easy
guineas,
things to pick
easy
out.
Stuff,
yeah.
right.
You
exactly.
step over it. It's almost like, hey, I can walk.
Yeah, you know, I really should be doing
walk.
That, but I don't have time. You know, you're like, but you're giving up 20% margin.
Yeah, and it's all about margin at the end of the game, right? So you set yourself up in a way that you have to understand your cost before you can understand your price.
Right.
And I think that's what business owners had a great idea. Let's, hey, I have an idea of like back of the envelope math, and this is what I should charge.
It's a product, it's a service, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then over time, what'll happen is this rate and the top half gets played with all the time, right? Yeah. Discounts, bundles, all those kind of cool, sexy terms, but your cost keeps growing. And as you know, and every other person in the world knows, costs go up every year. I don't care if you're a personal person or a vendor, you know, there's a rate. There's cost increase in the state of New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, whatever.
Well, I think a lot of small business owners don't recognize that cost of goods sold, right? The cost of producing their product or service is one part of it, right? And then there's all their operational costs and taxes and all these things that are happening behind licensing or whatever going on.
Legal fees, rent, facilities.
That drive up prices that you not that people don't pay attention to until they're like scratching their head. And they're like, I don't understand. Why are we not making any money? And I'm sure during this pandemic, a lot of people are scratching their head because you and I both know most business owners, you can't tell them we're going to take a 60-day vacation and shut the business, come back in 60 days. they won't be able to come back. So
exactly.
I always say that cash flow hides a lot of problems. Like if you have cash flow, you have capital in the bank, it just hides things and you get lazy about it. And, you know, you really don't do the right things. And then something like this happens, all the smoke clears because nobody's working. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I'm not even in business.
Yeah, why am I paying $100 a month for Vonage or whatever?
Right.
Like I don't have anything there. Like what am I doing?
But you didn't care about it before because cash flow kept coming in and
right.
The door and you don't realize.
It hides sins, right? I used to use the old word volume hides a lot of sins, right? I'm doing
good term.
Millions of dollars up top. Even if I don't make a ton of money, I'm still churning the top. I'm churning.
Right. Exactly.
But until it becomes to a situation like where we're in now where there's no churn. And like everyone's depleted. It's like, holy crap. You know, I got a roof on this house and there's like one stud in the wall.
Yeah.
Shit's going to collapse. I mean, pardon my friends.
And there'll be small business owners that don't come back because of this, you know, because they just can't do it.
It's a real shame because what's going to happen is the business owners that don't kind of partner with different people, it doesn't have to be me. It doesn't like, I'd love everyone to use me and I love everyone to use you, Mitch. But I think you and I do a justice to the small business model, but you know, it's just kind of looking at things in a different limelight and spending some time focusing on, you know, how to run your business efficiently and profitably.
Right.
You know, people talk about discounts. I hear the word price discounts all over the place. Like, hey, can I give 25%, get people in the door? Can I give 50%? Obviously now,
since
sales are meek,
Like,
I want to give 60%. Well, what does that do to
They figure like a dollar is better than zero, right? That's not always the case.
It's not. I mean, it's just... I go back to basics, right? I'm selling this phone. It cost me $500 to make it. How much am I selling it for? Right. Just plain and simple. Now that's $500 to make the phone. But now I got to pay myself. I got to pay Mitch. I got to pay this laptop I'm on, this calculator I use, this coffee mug,
some rent,
this internet, charger,
different kind of stuff.
The landline, you know, like those are indirect costs, right? We can talk direct and indirect. Let's just play plain and simple. Direct. Yeah. Cost of goods sold, anything related to the product or service. Indirect, myself, you, salaries,
the actual
legal work.
Operational cost of the business.
Yeah. And when you do pricing, to do it correctly, you have to have some kind of either allocation, percentage, or at least an exact number you put in to earmark those costs. Because what will happen is those costs, as we just spoke about, always grow.
They creep up.
And if you only look at it at the direct level, your margin's going to degrade over time.
Right.
Your profit because exactly margin. Like things will, it's just the, you know, my revenue only goes up X, but the other costs go up Y.
Right. And then it narrows the gap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something very simple to do. I mean, it's just, hey, listen, I used to charge, let's say I charge $50 a square foot for teak hardwood floors.
Okay.
Well, now I go back and look at it and hey, I should have been putting another, you know, $10 on top of it for my overhead costs. So maybe I can't get 60 in the marketplace, but I'll tell you what, maybe I can get 57, 58. You play with the price point a little bit. And then at least you've started to close the gap.
Right.
Like you've made an attempt to close the gap. Right now it's like, you know, hey, I can't do anything. I can't charge any more than what I'm already charging. Like I just can't survive. You know, the customers are going to hate me. You know, people pay for quality. You know, I've worked in large billion-dollar corporations where I've heard executives, EVPs, SVPs, you name it. I don't care about price. If quality's there, then I trust you. The integrity's there. Transparency is there. Now, in the consumer world, that's not always the same thing.
Of course.
There are people that do pay less about the price if they're getting a quality service.
Yeah, and there's price. How you view price and value versus what is value and real. So some people may not see the value of your product at a higher price. And look, there are industries you and I both know where you just can't price it high enough. So you better pay attention to your costs.
Exactly.
Your underlying costs. So can you get your operational costs down low enough to be able to compete for price? And you don't have to be the lowest in the marketplace. That's a really bad route to go down in most cases, right? Because you can only compete on price so much. So, but you don't want to be the most expensive. I mean, you can be in some cases, right? But there's still going to be a top to the marketplace. So if you're not watching your operational costs, and I think a lot of business owners who are smaller, they think of guys like you and me as like, oh no, I don't have a big enough company to have an outside CFO and a general counsel. Those are for larger manufacturing corporations and big, you know, organizations and stuff, but that's not true. So
yeah,
there's a lot of business owners that they can't put enough more pressure on their price, right? Because they're at a value level and maybe they can improve their value and push up the price a little bit, but they better pay real close attention to their operational costs and their, you know, the non-product related costs, not cost of goods sold, right? The ones that you mentioned, because that may be what makes or breaks them. I mean, in the short run, right?
I mean, listen, you can, I use the word like Six Sigma, lean, you know, all these like, you know, bottlenecks, all these inefficiency words, but when it comes down to it, it's just, you know, looking at kind of line item detail and saying, hey, like, what's an average? Like, right. I just give you an example. Let's say I wanted to, you know, procure legal services for a will. Maybe I go on the internet, search it.
And oh, my God.
Look, you can, hey, I'm paying $5,000 a month and it's like $2,500 over here for Mitch or whatever the case is. You know what I mean? Like, it's just about taking that time and, you know, peeling back the onion.
Like, oh, yeah, there's no question about it.
And process flow, right? When we talk about like a flow chart, all these sexy words. But again, let's bring it down to basics. What do you do? Like when I call you, give me the trigger, step 1 through 8,000. I don't care.
Right.
Hey, I answer the phone. All right. Well, how are you answering the phone? What do you do when you answer the phone? What's the script you go through? All right. What do we get from there? Where does the people go from there? Do we then outbound people or is then now it's a product? So now you're queuing up the order to your, you know, supplier or whomever. Like just follow the chain. And then eventually when you look at this big chain, you could say, hey, listen, step 3 inside the chain's broken. Like right there, I'm not getting
money. We're spending too much time. It's the wrong people.
I'm not getting critical information that's impacting my operations. That's making me inefficient from a cost mechanism. All right. Okay. Well, it didn't take a rocket scientist. Like by no means am I smarter than everyone else. I mean, there's a ton of consulting firms out there, right? It's just about partnering and understanding what the business owner wants,
right?
Like, what do you see is like anything that takes you away from what you're doing in my mind is what I'd like to help you on. I wish there was a term for that because I wouldn't call it a fractional CFO or a COO. It's, hey, how do I be a partner to your business?
Right.
You know, like I actually rebranded my business recently to add the COO because
you're an operations expert. Yeah. I mean, finance is part of that. Yeah. There's no question.
They tie hand in hand.
Of course, they should.
You know, like,
they don't talk, you got problems.
Like, hey, listen, if a sales guy is quoting a business, you know, and he's saying, hey, I can do these floors or I can paint your house for 25% less, you know, me being a finance guy says, oh, immediately, like, my margin's lost, right?
Right, right.
Now, where's the connection between those two people?
Yeah, because it could be a system. Up to get the job and maybe you're losing money because of it. And like, why are we even doing this?
Yeah, like, but does he not know? I go back to training.
Right.
Like, hey, listen, if I can come in and say, hey, I'm going to talk to Mitch and Trevor and I'm going to bridge the gap between the two of them, that's invaluable to me. I mean, I'd pay top dollar for that because those are two different worlds that are speaking to each other now.
Right. Of course.
And most of the ideas and projects that I've seen over my career, I obviously have a few ones that I tote, you know, obviously, but a lot of them come from the team there. Hey, listen, like I had a customer service person who had this great idea.
Right.
But it never materialized because it didn't have the right buy-in. I hate using the word executive buy-in, but I'll call it management buy-in for our purposes.
Meaning they thought it was a good idea. Yeah, exactly.
And they never either played it out or they never got buy-in from the actual business owner.
Right.
And that's where everything fails because I feel like they're not partnering with inside their own business. Like your employees are equity people. I mean, they're not equity people, but if you treat them that way,
they have to have the right job and everything. Absolutely. Look, I think a lot of times, look, the sales guy going out should know what price pressure he has. So if he wants to discount and he has certain room to discount, said, listen, I can knock off X. He's got to know what that's doing in the business model. Like, you know, just because your profit margin is 25% doesn't mean you can knock 20% off and you're still making five. It doesn't work that way. If you keep putting pressure on, you know, price pressure on your margins, you're going to run into problems because that gap, like you said, is it's not consistent. It's always flexing around, you know? So,
well, that's what I also hate the other side of the coin too. Like you mark up your service so much just to bring it down.
Right.
To me, that's like rob Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah. Kind of you're thing. Playing I feel like games just, with your marketing. Right.
I feel like maybe I have a different value of integrity, but I feel like to me, if I'm buying a product or a service from you and you dropped it 10% or you dropped it like 30% right off the get go, I'd say, what's going on here?
I mean, why wasn't it 30% less? When I walk,
maybe I'm a little bit well. We're a little bit more well informed, Mitch. But at the same time, if you know, I provide a quality service, my rate's kind of within the marketplace. And I'm like, you know what? I know I could probably give this guy up to 10%. That's my max.
Right.
And I work my way there if I need to. You know, like that makes sense to me.
Right.
Like, do
or
it the
or you, he was referred by a center of influence, you know,
friends
from
and family,
you.
Or whatever the case.
Somebody
is,
you like know, long-term and you customer. Say, yeah. Financial advisors generally send to me and I discount it usually about 15%.
Yeah.
Because I can't pay them. So
you yeah,
know,
exactly.
do it as a courtesy because they're sending me business, you know?
Yeah. So, and I mean, but that makes sense. And I'm sure
I can't do 25 or 50. I mean, I can't operate, you know,
but I'm sure that that makes sense for as a basis for the, when they refer to you and you do a quality service at less rate, you know, that just, it goes, it transcends you. And your business, right? It puts that word out there that you need to talk about marketing and stuff. Like maybe you don't need to be spending, you know, 20 grand a month on television or, number one, paper ads are dead. And I'm just, we'll start there just in general. But, you know, like maybe that's a way you can cut down on things. People forget that if I change things at my cost structure a little bit, or if I do something different, it may affect my cost or it may affect my revenue, right? Either or could be good, depending on how you do it.
Of course, could be both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think about, like when I think about challenging vendors, right? That's a big thing I'm about. Like when I talk about the word working capital, right? And the days, like how quickly do you pay people? Like it's just plain and simple, not just cash out the door. Hey, this vendor, Mitch is my guy and I pay him net 5 days. Why do you pay Mitch net five? I have a great relationship. I get like a 1% quick pay or early pay discount.
Right.
So have you folded the onion back, not using Mitch in this scenario, but just for in lack
general.
Of a term.
Right.
Have you looked at the impact to the profitability by doing that?
Yeah, definitely the speed at which money comes in the door. It directly affects the health of our economy, right? The speed in which money changes hands. So when everybody's nervous and they don't know when their money's coming in, they're very slow to pay their bills and it pushes us into a recession.
Yeah, and if we can be cognizant, and if you have buying power and you're working with suppliers that they may need you more than you need them. There's no harm in going out there and taking an RFP or you know, putting your bids out to service. That is if you've already kind of said, hey, listen, we're paying you too quick. We're not seeing the benefit, you know, financially,
right?
You know, and it's hurting us from a cash flow perspective. Like that's a way to tie things in very quickly. Or the same respect, I've called Trevor for 25 years and I've seen Trevor's children grow up and I love Trevor and, you know, Trevor could be the highest guy on the mark. I mean, like I have to do both sides. I said
you before, Mitch, I said me. Yeah, you know what I mean? But the other example.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just simple things, just going through like questions. So what I do when I work with any business models, I do like I call it a strategic assessment, which is just a fancy way of looking at your business and me going through and saying, hey, listen, they got vendor problems, they got management issues, they have cash flow, do they have a budget? Do they have any reporting so they know what they're looking at? Does data talk data? And then from there, I can create like a plan and say, hey, listen, if you want me to help you with this, this is like what I think it'll take in terms of hours and we can figure something out between us. But you have to like understand those things. Like business owners should almost be doing that monthly to some respect. I mean, especially now. I mean, forget that. Weekly is now probably the new norm just because businesses are closed. Right.
Look, it all comes down to three things, right? People, process, and product.
Yep.
And you could break those into all kind of categories. But right now, which is, I think I spoke about on my little, you know, live stream every Thursday. I think I spoke about it last week. This is a good time to evaluate that stuff. Your business is closed. Things aren't operating right. Make sure your people are in the right place. Sometimes
make sure you have the right people.
Yeah.
I mean, like, God forbid, you know,
try and fix your organization first with the people that, value you and people that are loyal to you. Maybe they're not in the right job. Maybe, you know, or maybe, you know, I was, we listened to, you know, Mike Michalowicz, the author, business author. He wrote Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, The Pumpkin Plan, Profit First, all those different
things. I think I've heard of him.
He spoke to our group last week. Anyway, he talks about a linchpin employee who is so key to the business that if they're not there, everything falls apart. So you've got to get away from that. You have to take that person and say, listen, Trevor, let's give you a 3-week vacation. But for the next 2 weeks, you prepare everybody to do your job.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable, and most of all, help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
And then if you're that good, you move up in the chain, oversee things. But it's really dangerous because you walk outside and get hit by a bus.
It's over.
The business is like, well, what did Trevor used to do? Well, I don't know. It was in Trevor's head, you know?
Well,
he was the only one who knew everything he did. And Trevor wants to be really valuable to the business and be that linchpin person. And at the same token, he's really actually hurting the business and putting it at risk because the business is too reliant on Trevor. And also, that puts a lot of stress on Trevor. Trevor has a stressful job. Everybody's looking at Trevor. They want things from him all the time. And then he tries to take on more things than he should. Because they don't want to say no to anybody. Oh, Trevor, can you help me with this? All right, fine. And then things start falling off of Trevor's desk because he's got so much stuff on his desk. It becomes problematic.
It's about like standardizing things, right? Like, so one of the things I'm big in, they're big in the corporate world. It's one of the reasons I went from large corporations. The same stuff that happens up there happens at a small level. They just have resources behind to kind of figure it out sometimes.
Right. Like exactly.
Standardization.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Like, hey, I come in and turn the lights on every day. Like, oh, well, who's turning the lights on? Well, Mitch does it. Holy shit.
Why?
Turn the lights on, what happens? I don't know. But well, like,
the day doesn't start, right?
The day doesn't start. But I mean, like, just understanding, you know, people's processes in place within an organization and business, which is business and like wider.
Very
term.
Common, very proper.
Yeah. Like, hey, I have a customer service rep who's, you know, going above and beyond and they're like, you know, putting out fires for me on the daily. Well, why are they a customer service rep? It sounds like they're a manager now, or at least some kind of senior
they should be
level
managing
position.
The CSRs, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, like what happens when they go? I mean, have you taken all that again? Like what you, to your point, like, have you taken all that kind of intuitive knowledge and that sweat equity they've built up over the years they've been with the organization and it's gone?
Yeah.
Well, no, you should have, you have to have stars. Like there can't, you can't like, you can't replicate what a star did. In my opinion, you can framework around the concept of what the scar is doing, but you can't exactly replicate it because then those people, everyone would be the same. But
right,
you can create, you can standardize the process.
But you can duplicate these people to a certain extent.
And replicate. Yeah. Replicate. Like, hey, listen, every time I go on a sales call, I was asking them how their family's doing. Well, why does he do that? And no one else does. Well,
right.
I don't know, maybe because he actually cares about people.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And he, oh, by the way, he's our top producer. Like he sells 25% more than the next person,
right,
or the best next person.
Right. So why is that?
Yeah. And it's, you break down what he does on his sales calls, and that maybe that's the, you know, that's his like claim to fame, you know,
right.
And something as simple as that. It's just, but it goes back to the reporting and stuff and kind of maintaining vendors and all this other stuff with inside a business model. It's like, hey, like what do they do? Like, what does Mitch do when he comes in on a daily basis? Like, how do I get my information to the bank when they ask me what I'm doing with my line of credit or my covenants, whatever the case is? Well, where does it come from? Oh, crap. Well, I mean, 20 of us put this information right. together and it goes out.
Yeah.
Why is 20 people doing it? Like the right. QuickBooks, Sage, whatever it is.
Very inefficient. Yeah, exactly.
And then just creating some kind of simple things like, hey, just like if you do this and you hit automate, oh, wow. Like I'm not trying to take people's jobs away, but also at the same time, trying to understand like how you get rid of things that shouldn't be done. Like that's every job I've ever been in my full-time career.
Right.
I've went in and I sat down and said, hey, let me just evaluate what the team does.
Right.
By no means, I love everyone here, but let me just see what's happening, what's coming out of the team.
Right.
9 times out of 10, there's so many inefficient like processes, reports going out. And like, why did you do it?
Because they're haphazard. They were never set
I've always
up.
Done it. Mitch, right. I've known you for 20 years. They're just saying like, you've always told me to do this. That's what I've always done.
Right.
And then you teach that person that piece. It's that old telephone game, you know, probably in the beginning, a long time ago, it was great. But now it doesn't work out anymore.
Yeah, because it was the business owner and his assistant. That was it. It was the two of them. They were just getting started. And
yeah.
He did all the office support. And he would come in and say, here, can you take care of this? Can you do that? Let's do this. And then they started growing. Now they have 5 or 10 employees that have been added to do different things. And then just things shot all over the place.
Yeah.
Different
it's
people.
Like, and then when you go back in and you try to peel the onion back on those things and look at, hey, listen, you know, Mitch was doing this or Trevor was doing that. You're like, wow, like. Man, that made sense. Like when we made, you know, 50 grand a year, now we're making
500. Yeah. 10
yeah. Like,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that's not scalable. So, no. But it's good. Like you have to have those baselines to start. Cause then you say, all right, what can I use here? And maybe I could take something from it. Maybe
right.
we can evolve it. Right. People talk about, I hate that word pivoting. Like I use it too quite a bit and I shouldn't.
Well, it's developing, right? You're
right.
developing people.
You adapt,
processes.
You evolve, right? Yeah. Like, pivoting sounds to me just like
a change in the business, what you're doing.
Yeah. But you're really just kind of, you're really evolving. Businesses evolve, right? Hey, listen, through the COVID crisis right now, businesses have to evolve.
Oh, we yeah. The way that they deal with their customers is going to change. The way they collect money is changing. Look, a lot of small business owners are like, well, I don't take credit cards, you know, because it's expensive and we have to pay. Yeah. But there's a value to the reliability of people paying and the speed at which you get paid and the convenience of people paying. And now it's more than convenience. It's like people don't want to touch cash.
Yeah.
You know? So you better come up with different methods for them to pay you.
And the solutions, right? You have like touchless POS systems, like where, you know, I've demoed things, you know, recently where it's like people come in and not even have to touch anything. They use your own phone, which you feel to me, that's ultra comfort. If I'm going to go somewhere and I'm eventually going to be able to take my mask off, whatever the case is. And then I don't have to like physically hand you my credit card.
Right.
Like besides you bringing my food or whatever the case.
Right.
Like
right.
bringing clothes, whatever the model
contact,
is.
Legitimately contact delivery or service.
Yeah. Contactless, whatever. Right. Exactly. Like
100%.
If I can get as close to that as possible, at least now, it'll get consumers to feel comfortable.
That's the biggest issue people are going to face now.
Oh my God. Like,
just because the government says you can open doesn't mean people are comfortable to go to your salon and get your hair done when people are cutting your hair and standing over you with a face shield. I don't know about that.
If tomorrow, like everyone just all unanimously across all the states in the United States were like, yeah, everything's fine. Everything's back to normal. People would still not feel like it was back to normal. Right. So there's going to be such
more
a lag.
Right.
Yeah. And like, it's just like, how do you mitigate and how do you make, for me, how do you make someone feel safe? Well, if you meet somebody and let's say you're more comfortable and you're in the opportunity of shaking hands again,
right?
Like a dead art,
right?
But
exactly.
Let's say they're not. You don't put your hand out, make them feel uncomfortable. You like the same way works for business owners. Like, but then as a business owner, you have to realize that now you're not going to have as much capacity.
Right.
So now you're looking at things in a different limelight. Like, hey, maybe I can't have the staff I used to have. Or maybe I need to create alternative services to kind of help augment where I am today. You know, like I think of like You know, I saw something very interesting. I'm not going to plug the name of the business because I saw it when I was riding my bike with my family in the Highlands.
Right.
But it was a traveling boutique. It was in someone's truck.
Okay.
Bunch of clothes, touchscreen POS. Like, so you did have to swipe your card, but I mean, people weren't wearing masks. So you know, you get close enough to just do the swipe.
Right.
I mean, damn, I'm not like a shopaholic by nature, but I like some clothes, you know, every now and then, right. You know, you need a fresh pair of socks and, you know, clean shirt.
Yeah.
And I hate using Amazon for everything.
I know.
Like, it's just after a while you want to get back out there. So maybe that's a way that some places can, you know, start. I'm going to start looking into it and talk to retail shops and say, I saw them do it. I'm sure they don't have the, you know, the trademark on being outside because it's basically everyone could be outside.
Of course.
You
know? Right. They don't have the patent on it.
Yeah,
no, so that's like, what I was talking about last week on my live stream was that business owners better think about how the customers want you to do business with them, not how they can do business under the law and the governor's orders, how customers want to do business. What's going to make them comfortable? Like you said, what's going to make you go back in to a retail store, a men's clothing store or whatever, be in that store and willing to try things on or do different things? Because right now I had like a Lord & Taylor gift card or something. Well, first of all, I'm thinking, oh, well, Lord & Taylor might go out of business during this whole thing. I better use it.
Yeah.
So I ordered some pants online. I went through their sizing chart and they came and they fit me, which was surprising. But
yeah.
I would never do that. I would go and try the clothes
on. Yeah, you try them on. Yeah, yeah. Right?
So
how do you get people back to feeling comfortable
enough? Yeah.
But like some level of comfortability. You know, I talk with the restaurants. We talk about like outdoor dining. You talk about the food truck model. And I talked about this before too. Like, listen, how do you create like an outdoor environment? Obviously, dining will be allowed outdoors soon, right? In the next week, 2 weeks, whatever the case is.
Yeah, New Jersey, June 15th, yeah.
But how do you just get past that? I mean, there's only so much real estate out there in front of your restaurants, unless you have 10 acres that I don't know about. Most restaurants don't. Like, no, can you find places that you can set up shop temporarily? It's beautiful in New Jersey right now. I mean,
we should all be outside. But then it rains, you know? And you're shut down that day.
Yeah, so, but can you make it nimble enough and can you make the business model work? If you look at it, you call someone like me, maybe like you, and we look at the information and say, hey, listen, if you charge this price point, you expect this many customers, you can make this thing go.
Right.
Like, wow. You start creating a buzz again. Like, and people feel safe. People aren't next to each other.
Safe. That's the biggest problem. There's going to be people that don't come even outdoors.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so much we could do in this world.
Until they kind of see what's going on and how.
Yeah. Right. You hear about like, hey, listen,
spikes, right. And
Mitch and Trevor went to this outdoor restaurant the other day in, you know, Westfield Park or something like that, wherever the case is. And, you know, I think they're both okay. I've heard from both of them. They're both doing okay. And, you know, they didn't have to wear their mask because maybe the tables were 20 feet apart.
Right. Exactly.
And we're outside and I feel a little comfortable. I got my little daughter with me and I feel like I'm able to kind of do this again. And then that creates a buzz, you know, like everyone's like, oh God, maybe we should do this. You know,
of course. Well, it happened the reverse of that. It was like, this is going on. So now we shouldn't do this. So it's going to take a while to loosen up. I mean, that's definitely a problem.
But I just caught.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
What no, go saying? Ahead. You tell me.
I just caution business owners now to like, look at like their price, look at their costs. Obviously, like when I think when they use the word discount, be careful. Right. Because you can only drop your price so much. If you don't, you can discount up to 100% if you're willing to suffer.
Yeah, give it away for
unless
free.
You know your cost mechanism and what you need to make, I'd say I'd be weary or leery about giving, you know, incentives.
Right. You really got to know your pricing structure and your cost. Yeah, it really costs to run your business. I think that's where things really fall apart. I mean, look, I know businesses have marketing problems, right? They don't market enough. They don't sell enough. But at the end of the day, if you could sell your way to the moon, if every product you're doing is losing 50 cents, it's going to catch up with you at some point, especially during times like these.
Yeah, I mean, like you may only have, you go from 10,000 sales a month to 500. So those 500 have to be like spot on or at least close to like, you know, an average of where you need to be. So you don't further degrade yourself and put yourself into a worse situation when the gates do open a little bit more and you're not, you know, nimble enough or not viable enough to make a go out of it because you've put yourself down this hill and just keep falling and falling and you really didn't have a catch at the bottom.
Well, I think also business owners need to know if the governor says, okay, you can be open at 50% capacity.
What does that look like?
You're not making, first of all, you got to figure out, are you making money, right? Because if you're losing money, then you might as well not open until you can open up bigger. But if you are breaking even, let's say, you better know your numbers to know, okay, well, when do I start making money? Is it at 55%? Is it at 60%? Is it at 75%? Is it at 90%? Maybe you shouldn't be in business if it's at 90%, but you know what I'm saying? So this is,
we should break even. Yeah. Really
do, yeah. So let's talk about that, because I think that the part of a business plan that business owners struggle the most with is the financial part of it. You know, I think, you know, doing a marketing plan and saying you're going to do things on social media and putting that together, and these are my people and this is my business and the product and so forth, is doable. And I would say, I rarely read that as part of a business plan, because it always sounds good, right? If you're writing a business plan, it sounds bad, there's something wrong. It should always sound good if you're writing it, right?
Oh, yeah.
It sounds really where the truth comes, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing it right. So what kind of advice do you have for people that are, you know, they're not large corporations, they're not CFO people. How do they get started? What kind of things should they do to kind of start to create the financial portion of their business plan, which they may have never really done before?
Yeah. I mean, like if I look at like if we just use the word break even, because I think that's a perfect example, by the way, Mitch. Okay. Like where do I need to stand? Like just start something simple, right? So if I look at we'll use the word of direct and indirect costs, right?
Okay.
Direct costs or anything tied to your service or product, right? Like what does it cost me to make it? Like,
right.
If I'm shipping it.
The cost of producing your product directly, right?
Yeah. Like, let's just use that as like the only node that we use for direct costs.
Okay.
And then let's just say, hey, listen, just then alone, what else do I need to supply that? Well, I have a land lease, you know, but right. Forget marketing and other stuff for now. Just kind of basic.
Just say you have rent, you have a phone.
Rent. What are the things that are like, I have a phone, I have internet, I have three employees, right? Let's just start with basic things,
right?
Just to kind of keep things simple. And then let's just say you're selling a widget or a product. It's a little bit easier. Services are a little bit harder, but on a product basis, hey, I need to sell, you know, 50 coffee mugs at, you know, $2 a unit. All right.
Okay.
Does that break me even based on what I just told you?
Right.
And then once you get that
spreadsheet, right?
Put down. Yeah. Once you get that simple concept down, and by no means you need to pay me to create a spreadsheet like that. You could Google that. I'm going to give the best advice ever.
Right.
Go to Excel, go to the internet. Sales break even analysis. There's tons of plug and play templates. You don't need to be a guru. Like I tell this to everybody, to people I work with. Like,
yeah,
I didn't create this. Like, no. I'll help you walk through it and help you kind of divulge it, but I wish I could take credit for it. Yeah. Right. It's just like, you know, like can you look at that and then say, hey, you know, in a down market at 25% capacity, you know, what does that bring those sales? So originally I was at, I don't know, let's just call it 10,000 coffee mugs a month. Now at 20%, you know, just simple math, I'm just not going to do it on the phone, right? Like, right, hey, I'm at 2,000, 3,000, whatever it is. Yeah. So what does that do to that same model we just talked about? So my cost of goods or direct costs didn't change, right? Because they're pretty much stagnant. And then my fixed costs stayed.
Well, they're tied to per unit. So your
costs obviously down. They go down, but as
it's not
going to
be direct, right? Because you may be paying more per unit now than you were at 10,000, then you're paying at 2,000. But let's assume that you don't.
Yeah.
So you drop 80%.
Let's say most of the things are the same.
80%. Let's say.
Yeah. So what does that do to your profit? Just simple, but plain and simple.
It's the analogy. They're going to kill you.
Yeah. It's kind of like I pay myself. Why I pay my? I have to pay my rent. Like so,
you
get to
paid last, right?
Right. So I get to a loss leader. Like, and then once you have a loss leader identified, I always like to work my way backwards. Right. So you brought up a great point. Supplying power. Right. So if I buy 100 million of one thing, it costs me less. If I buy 10 of it, it costs me more. It's just plain and simple.
Right.
That's, you know, the ABCs of the world. Like, so now I need to keep that intact. And you start layering different things in. That's kind of how I've ever done a detailed analysis. I start with something very, very simple. And then I kind of look at it and talk about it with other people. I'm not an army of one. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know everything, but I say, hey, Mitch, take a look at this, right? What do you think? And then we say, oh, well, you forgot, you know, office supplies, or you forgot marketing, or you forgot, you know, and then you start to, oh, okay.
Insurance.
Insurance, use line item, right? Yeah. Or T&E, right? I have to travel or pay whatever for my Zoom accounts now.
Right. Maybe you got to go to trade shows, right? You need a booth. You're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, right. It just adds up.
You start kind of
With 4 or 5, you get to 50.
Right.
And now you have like, wow, you have something here. And then you go, hey, listen, what if I discounted my rate? All right. Well, now you really start to move in a moment.
Then you can play around with numbers because it's a safer way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but what I always like to do is I like to bring in, like, I think of my lieutenants in the organization, whether they be managers, whomever, even customer service reps, whatever the case is. Like, things that obviously is a level of confidentiality, right? You have to be careful with that. But at the same time, say, hey, listen, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, changing my rate to X. You spitball these ideas with people and then new things come out. It's one of the reasons I always like working with teams and not just by myself, even if it's right. a colleague, because someone's always going to have a different point of view, not a better point of view. But there will be other points of view. Business owners don't know everything. Even the most profitable business owner in the world, you know, doesn't know everything. They right. still had someone they talked to, wife, children, family, whomever.
Right.
There's some ideas coming from other places. It's about, you know, collaborating those ideas and making sense of them.
Yeah, that's what I like the idea of an advisory board, even if it's a couple of people that you rely yeah, I mean, on for your business, I mean, your mentors.
You and I have talked about this. You know, I'm not going to plug what I'm doing down at the end of June, but at the same time, I'm not an IT guy. I know IT very well because I've had ERPs. I've played around with different systems and I'm technically savvy. Like I can look at data and can understand it. But, you know, if I'm doing something that requires like a changeover in my accounting system per se,
right.
I wouldn't do it myself. I'm probably almost qualified to do it, but I'd reach to a resource, you know, right. an expert within that field. And then as I'm dealing with them, maybe I pick up some tools of the trade and I learn a little bit more. And then I'm able to kind of help businesses even further because now it's something I didn't know, but I'm part of the process.
Right.
That's why cross-functional teams do better than, you know, salesmen and salesmen, finance and finance, legal right. and legal.
No, because they all have different perspectives. If there are five sales guys, they're probably close to the same perspective.
Yeah.
A little right. bit, but not enough.
You throw in, if I'm thinking about like a restaurant, you throw in a server, a chef,
right.
your business manager, and I don't know, your marketing person, for lack of a better word, you know, you put them together and you say, hey, listen, like, how do we resolve our menu problems? Whoa. Server's like, oh, I didn't, you know, shrimp cocktails serve like go like hotcakes. Maybe the chef didn't even know that, you know, right. maybe they should. Maybe the marketing person didn't know that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And is that highlighted on your menu in such a way, or is there some kind of promo with that? You know, I mean,
yeah,
I struggle with people that try to do it all themselves. I really do. It's too difficult a world and you're missing out. I think you're missing too much. You're missing way too much.
Well, very often than not, we're brought in when there's problems, not when they're building a team to increase the efficiency of their business. And I understand that. I mean, people are dealing with their problems and they're trying to run their business and they have cash flow and they're like, oh, let's go out and spend money on a CFO and a general counsel, you know? And it's usually like, oh, Mitch, I had a little problem, you know, the DOL called me and I got a problem with employees and they're fining me. I'm like, okay. Then I got to figure out, well, what's going on with their process, where their records look like, how do they keep their records, how do they contract their employees, the whole process. Where did that break down? Or maybe the government's just wrong, but.
Which is not uncommon.
which is very common. But I think that that's important. And I think that building processes to run your business so you can eventually be the guy who doesn't show up every day and is the real entrepreneur and so forth is important when it comes to, you know, kind of figuring out all these things and not having it break down and not knowing, right? The worst thing happens when your car breaks down and you don't know what's wrong with the car. You don't, not a mechanic.
Pay someone to diagnose it. You got to pay somebody to diagnose it, right?
What do I do now? So you got to call a guy to pick up the car and they got to tow it there. And then they're going to look at the car and figure out what's wrong with it, but you can't do it.
Yeah.
It's the problem. We can't always diagnose our own businesses. We're too what's the word? We're too attached to.
Too ingrained in what's going on.
Like,
yeah, like emotionally attached. Yeah. Situational awareness. I've heard that term a lot.
That's like, a good term.
Do you sit inside a box and like, hey, listen, I can tell you there's a spider crawling on my basement wall behind me. Like I just off the corner of my eye, I caught it. It's going to freak me out a little bit later. I have to take care of it. But, are you a business owner so caught up in what's going on today? Putting out the fires that you miss that. I have a crack in the foundation.
Like, right. You don't see that.
Well, it's been there, whatever. I don't care about it. You know.
Right.
Well, pretty soon the friggin' building's going to collapse on top of you. I mean, God forbid, but you know, like, how do you get past that? And I mean, you have to, like, I mean, it, I don't want to say you need consultants and you need people like us in their lives, but I'd be damned if we don't try to make it easier. If at the very minimum, we're just trying to alleviate some of your stress.
You need advisors of some sort. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, again, I just go back to there's no army of one.
Right.
You can't possibly know everything. No. And especially when it comes to you know, there's always updates in the legal world of what's going on. There's always different ways to look at finance, and, you know, accounting is a whole other nightmare. I mean, CPA and tax advisor, I mean, that changes right now, what, daily with what's going on in the world. You know, these guys are men and women out there are just like racking their brains because something new is different. Yeah. Exactly. And take advantage of that. I mean, take advantage of people with experience within their field. Or I always like dealing with someone who I know failed quite a bit because I know they've seen a lot of crap. You know, that's that's kind of my MO.
We'll learn more from struggles and failures than we do from success. Some questions.
I've been part of a ton of projects that have failed. I've been blamed. I was told I led pursuit teams that didn't work out well, but I learned. I'll be honest with you. I won't make those mistakes again. Yeah. I'll never make the same mistake.
Right. You'll go. You make other mistakes. That's part of growing.
I know. I will make other mistakes. There.
No question.
So like that's kind of me, and like I guess from my business model, if I can just help, you know, businesses kind of help get through this, and then, you know, once we get through this, then it's another world, right? Then it's how do we plan, you know, in the future and protect ourselves down the road,
right?
Because now this is a wake up call.
We can deal with this,
Like, how do we weren't necessarily set up financially, operationally, legally to kind of go through these kind of things.
No, there's no question about it.
Technology, right? Technology is probably going to be the biggest one of them all because no one was ready for, you know, touchless everything.
Right.
But some people were, I shouldn't say. That. Probably a
But the word Zoom didn't exist in most people's vocabulary.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they knew FaceTime, but not for the way we're working. And I think the ironic thing is that companies are finding that employees, in a lot of cases, are more productive at home. They're working longer hours because it's flexible. They're more available. They're on these calls. They're doing this. They're doing that. The companies are getting more out of them.
Yeah.
First of all, they don't lose an hour or two traveling, right? Back and forth. They don't need to be there where you're touching each other, you know? It's overvalued. I mean, we want to see people. I think the employees, if they have a choice, they would do a hybrid, right? Where they can come in the office a couple of days a week, and they would stay home a couple of days a week. That would be their choice to operate. I don't think people want to completely stay at home, never see each other. They do want to be in the position where you say, oh, next pandemic came. Okay, I'm ready. I can stay home. But ultimately, you want to get out. I mean, we live on human contact. You want to be out there.
Yeah, I mean,
to do it every day, getting on the train, taking the bus, going to the city, walking across town, hearing the noise, smelling the this, the that.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I think about just how life, like, I mean, just kind of like, so I lived in Toms River and I commuted to Midtown Manhattan
That's a huge commute.
And I thought to myself, man, if I could do something like, God, I'm on buses, I'm walking, I'm driving my car to them.
How long did your commute take each way? 2 hours? Like
2.5. Two to 2.5. One way.
Five hours.
And then
what do we work? Most people work 8 to 10 hours a day.
Yeah, like that was like a 10.
That's crazy.
And you scale back, and like every job I've ever had, commuted up North Jersey, right? There's a lot more opportunity there than there is here. And, you know, like when this thing happened, you know, like people start like realizing, hey, like I talked to a potential client in Scotland the other day. I'm like, whoa, crap. Like I didn't even know I could do that. But, you know, I think, you know, people like businesses are going to have to like evolve again now and say, hey, listen, like maybe I didn't need to do it this way. Maybe I can use suppliers out in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Maybe they can make it work
here. I can tap in employees in North Carolina.
Yeah, right. Or like exactly. But you don't want to lose the core of what made your business the business too. Like don't like, I don't want to use the word sell out, but don't just boom. All right. Everything's now virtual, right? Like there's a reason people come to you for your product or your service.
Of course.
Don't lose that special sauce. But at the same time, if you can make it a little bit more efficient, or you can outsource pieces of it to make it better, then there's no problem doing that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. So
I think that's where businesses need to evolve.
Well, why don't we, maybe you can give us some links in the show notes to some, break even analysis templates or something people can get.
There's a ton. I'd love to. You know what? Actually, I'm going to make a note of that because I think, you know, it's so funny. Just real quick, I spoke to a friend of mine who's starting a new business and they were talking about like break even. I'm like, oh man, I'm going to say you something like, oh, this looks great. I'm like, yeah, it looks really good, right? I'm like, I did it. They're like, no. I'm like, yeah, I didn't do it. I'm just kidding around. Like, it's on the internet. Go Excel. Yeah, go Google Excel documents and type in break even and you'll find like the top one is beautiful. Like I refer to it all the time. Like
Same with business plan templates in general. You can get a whole template of a whole business plan.
Why struggle? You don't recreate. You don't recreate the wheel, but we do make it spin faster, right? That's the idea.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Like, yeah, I don't start. If you need a contract or a will or a business document, I don't start with white paper and a pencil. Kidding me?
We're not artists. I am a little bit of an artist when it comes to the method, but not. I don't blank it out.
The blank canvas. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's craziness. Exactly.
Exactly.
All right, well, Trevor, I appreciate you coming on today. If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is a production of Mitchell C. Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.